Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man that swears he saw Abraham Lincoln driving a Lincoln. He is the captain.
Thank you. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Tonight we are drinking Bonehook Pilsner from beautiful Naples, Florida. Garage grade, 3.5 bottle caps out of 5. Bonehook Pilsner is just what you would expect from any great Pilsner. It's light and it's smooth, and for me, just the right amount of dry. Last year, a lot of great craft breweries have gone on to put out some truly great Pilsners, and this is one of them. And today's round of beers was brought to us by, first up, we have Philip in Schaumburg, Illinois.
And a big shout out to Emily in Nashville, Tennessee.
Next, going out west, we have Liz in Bothell, Washington. And also in Washington, we have Catherine, who is in Bellingham.
A big hey Jude to Jude in Sandpoint, Idaho.
And a cheers goes out to Suzanne and Jared in Pittsburgh. And last but certainly not least, we have a shout out to Big Al on the Parts Unknown Citizen Patrol.
All right, thanks for donating to the beer fund. If you'd like to do so, go to truecrimegarage.com. And click on the donate banner.
And a cheers goes to you, my friend Captain. All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. On June 28, 2015, Dr. Teresa Severs flew home from Connecticut to her home in Florida without her husband Mark and their two daughters. The following morning, on June 29th, she was found brutally murdered, bludgeoned to death inside her home. Now, on July 6th, just a little over a week into the investigation of the death of Teresa Severs, there is finally a little bit of good news, at least for those in the area of the Severs home. This is when Sheriff Mike Scott told a local reporter, quote, "I am like you or anyone else. I want a killer behind bars. We are working tirelessly," Scott said. "All hands are on deck here, literally." He went on to say, "It's a very complicated case. There are details I wish I could share, but I cannot. Mm-hmm. I take a little bit of comfort knowing it's not random or arbitrary," Scott said of the murder. He says his investigators have processed hundreds of pieces of evidence from inside the home and elsewhere, including from cell phone and computer records from the home and from the office. He also said that he believes everything that they have in this case, and he states it's a lot. Mm-hmm. Gives him comfort in saying that this is not a random murder. This is not arbitrary. There are connections that will continue to develop. When asked about whether people should be concerned about a killer still on the streets, he said this, the good news with homicide is, generally speaking, random murder is not the case. Generally speaking, there are connections. I think that's the case that will play out here as well.
2 months after the murders take place, the arrest will be made.
Yes, these are some new suspects that we've not even spoken about yet, Captain. And this was taken from the Florida Today newspaper from August 27, 2015. The headline, "The Lee County Sheriff's Office announced an arrest in the murder of a well-known Estero doctor." During a press conference, Lee County Sheriff Mike Scott said they apprehended Jimmy Rogers for the killing of Dr. Teresa Severs, who was found dead in her Bonita Springs home in late June. Mm-hmm. Details were not provided on the arrest or how investigators made the connection between Severs and Rogers. Scott declined to take any questions. A spokesman for the sheriff's office could not provide an exact spelling of the arrest man's name. The sheriff's office issued an arrest warrant for Rogers on a charge of second-degree murder, according to a federal arrest warrant. Lee Detective Mike Downs contacted a federal probation agent Monday that Rogers was in the Walmart on 6 Mile Cypress Parkway the day before the murder, which is a violation of Jimmy Rogers' probation. Seavers was killed nearly 2 months ago on June 29th. Scott called Seavers' case very much an ongoing and active investigation and said the homicide is a most complicated set of circumstances. Scott said the FBI and the state attorney's office are involved in the case. Now, one thing that there's several shockers here, in my opinion, that are not included in the Florida Today article that we just read. First, Jimmy Rogers is and was living in Jefferson County, Missouri, both at the time of Teresa Seavers' death when she was killed and months later when he is later arrested.
Which is what, roughly?
1,100 miles or so away. The other thing, too, that we've already brought up, we've not spoke about this guy, but that's because nobody knows who this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
Not Teresa's family, not the people at her office, not the neighbors that were so concerned that a madman was on the loose. Then later that day, another bombshell. There's a second arrest is made, and this is Curtis Wainwright was arrested. He, too, in Jefferson County, Missouri. But there's one big difference here with Curtis Wainwright.
Right.
A lot of people know who Curtis Wainwright is, right?
Yeah, but the weird thing is when they show his picture, you're reading an article normally and there's some picture that goes with the article.
Yeah.
Like most people stop reading the article because this guy looks exactly like Mark Seavers.
Yeah, so to describe Mark Seavers for you would be the same way of describing Curtis Wainwright. They're men who shave their heads.
Right.
They have glasses, and it appears to be damn near identical glasses, prescription glasses that they wear, and they both have goatees.
Mm-hmm.
They have a like similar twins. Build, too. Yeah, I've heard people say that they look like twins. But the crazy thing to me is, and we should... Curtis Wainwright, he goes by Wayne, so just to smooth it out a little bit, we'll call him Wainwright from this point on.
So we have Jimmy and Wayne.
Jimmy Rogers and Wayne Wright, yes.
And they're both arrested in Missouri.
Correct. Nobody...
1,100 miles away. The difference between Jimmy and Wayne is that Wayne is best friends with Mark Seavers.
Yes. He's not only best friends with Mark Seavers, he also loosely works for Teresa and Mark Seavers as well. He's a computer IT guy. He went to college for a computer, and he was the guy that set up the computers at the Dr. Teresa's office.
Mm-hmm.
And he monitored them. He would, I love when we talk about computers because I don't have any words. No words come out.
Right.
But
it's because you know the subject so well that it's hard for you to explain it
to the layperson, yes,
mortals.
But, mm-hmm. but yeah, if the computer system went down, he would fix it. He made sure that the computers kept up and running at the doctor's office.
Mm. Okay.
The two are also not just best friends, but they've been best friends since almost their childhood.
Right.
So even Mark Seavers' family is well aware of Wayne Right. Now, what's the connection? How do you connect these two guys from Missouri to the death of Teresa Seavers?
Well, we have them both on camera at a Walmart that's less than 6 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
The day before or the day of?
It would
have been the Sunday.
It would be, on Sunday the 28th. Now, so in building the case, and I'm a little unclear as to how exactly the police got to Jimmy Rogers and Wayne Wright. One thing I found, but I could not verify this to be 100% accurate, so take this for what you will. It sounds to me like these two jokers, they talked a lot. They talked a lot about going to Florida beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and they talked about having been to Florida when they got back. One of the two, I believe it was Rogers, even texted someone or had a phone call with someone while he was in Florida. Someone from his work had contacted him asking if he could come into work, but he says he can't because he's still in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, this is at a time that would have put the two in the state of Florida, like the captain said, when Teresa Seavers was killed, roughly. So I've seen it suggested, maybe even reported. I have it in my notes, but again, I cannot confirm the crazy thing about this case, Captain, there is a lot out there. And I know you thought this too. There's a lot of information on this case out there. There's a lot of good information too. So there was not a whole lot of time spent hunting for info on this case. There was just so much reading and so much to consume and think about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the thing is, I want to remind you of what the lead detective on this case said. And I think he is exactly right when he described this case as a most complicated set of circumstances, because it truly is.
Right. But this part of the case isn't that complicated. We have two individuals that traveled over 1,100 miles. We have them within a 10-mile radius of the murder taking place. We now have one of the suspects, Wayne, has a direct connection with the murdered victim,
mm-hmm.
worked for her, was best friends with her husband, and we have probably evidence at the scene, fingerprints and things of that nature. We also have a list of what they bought at the Walmart. We have phone records. We have text records that they were in Florida. We have Jimmy talking with his girlfriend mm-hmm. at the time about being in Florida. And we also have the murder weapon that was right by the victim.
Well, okay, so let's get into this a little bit. I'm trying to piece together how they got to these two individuals. I think that it's possible that they may have been contacted by somebody that knew one of them, either Jimmy Rogers or Wainwright. As I stated, they were telling people that they were going to Florida. They were telling people that they had just been to Florida.
Right.
So by now, we have both of these douche canoes in jail. Both have had their trailer homes raided at this point. The police even got information from Jimmy Rogers' girlfriend. That's right. One of the suspects, his girlfriend confesses to deputies that she knows exactly what happened. This is Taylor Shoemaker. Rogers' girlfriend tells detectives about his trip to Florida. Taylor is going to relay a story to the police, but we have to keep in mind here that she has already been questioned by police before she gets into this questioning room here. Mm-hmm. She was questioned by police. This was in front of Jimmy Rogers. So later, the two of them, Jimmy Rogers and Taylor Shoemaker, are having a conversation. She's going to relay this conversation to police. She said during this conversation, she said, quote, he, referring to Rogers, started asking me, like, what do I know about it? I'm like, well, I know you went down there to kill somebody. And then he said, yeah. She goes on stating, I asked him what he went down there for, and he said to make money. And then I asked him, how does he make money? He said, murdering Mark's wife. Then Shoemaker recounts how Rogers then laughed when explaining how he had killed Teresa. Taylor told the police, quote, I said, did you shoot her? And he said, no. And I said, then how did you kill her? Then he made this stupid little chuckle that he does. And then he said, with a hammer. She also told detectives that Teresa's own husband, Mark Seavers, hired Wainwright to kill his wife. She says suspect Curtis Wainwright then hired Jimmy to help out. To help out without Mark's knowledge. Taylor told police the hammer, well, that was his weapon of choice because, quote, everybody calls him Jimmy the Hammer, all of his friends back home.
Yeah, but nobody calls him the Hammer.
He calls himself the Hammer.
Like on his Facebook or his MySpace or something, he was Jimmy the Hammer Rogers, right?
Okay.
But he made it up himself. And it was like one of those names that would be like your friend coming, hanging out in the garage saying, hey, call me the Hammer. And everybody else is like, yeah, we're not doing that. We're not doing that shit. But yeah. And then Jimmy goes on to say that I believe that Wayne tried to hit Teresa first. And then he ended up taking the hammer from Wayne and doing it himself.
Yeah, so Taylor Shoemaker, she says that when the police were questioning her and Rogers together, that's when she knew something bad had happened when he went to Florida.
But she also threw out some items, some gloves and like a shirt from their truck.
Yeah, and that actually happened after the police spoke with the two of them. Now, when they spoke with the two of them, it was a very loose kind of casual interaction. It wasn't like they brought them in for questioning and separated them and did all that jazz. No, this was just they went to a place where they both were. It could have been one of their homes or their home that they were sharing. I don't know. But they just kind of sat down, asked where you were, what were you doing, these things.
Here's how I handle that questioning, right? Interrogation, right? You be Jimmy. Okay.
Okay.
I go, Jimmy Rogers?
Yes, sir.
Can I call you the Hammer?
That's what everybody calls me.
And then I just call him Hammer the whole time. That's how that would work.
What happens is after they get this kind of casual interaction with the police, that's when Jimmy Rogers gets in the car with his girlfriend and says, you know, they drive out into the country. And I think it was near either his mother's home or her mother's home. I'm a bit uncertain of this, but they're driving out
some peaches.
They're driving out on some country road and he's instructing her to throw some items out of the vehicle.
Right.
These end up being clothing items, which she does later lead the police to these items, and they're all recovered exactly where she said they would be recovered from.
Yeah, and so it's kind of weird because when you watch not the interrogation, but the questioning with her, you do feel bad for her because sometimes the police are like, well, why did you do that? She's like, well, I'm riding in a truck with somebody that I think just murdered somebody he didn't even know with a hammer.
She was afraid of him, very obviously afraid of him. And she probably was, you know, it's to me when I hear her speak and I read her words, it's like when the police showed up to ask some questions kind of randomly, this would have been out of the blue to her. You know what I mean? This would not be something she was expecting. It was like a light went off for her during that kind of questioning. Like, holy crap, this guy has done something.
Right, but mind you, he broke his probation going to Florida anyways, so we know that he was convicted of something before. He was in jail. That's how Jimmy and Wayne met each other, was in jail. So when she's dating him, you know, she probably was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. He went to prison. Maybe he's changed.
You know, everybody in there is innocent, right?
Well, right. But what I'm saying is, no, I'm sure there's a couple that are like, nah, I did it. Whatever.
Joseph Metheny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did it. And I did a lot of other stuff.
I cooked them up and put them in hamburgers. My point is that she's dating this guy. She's probably trying to give him the benefit of the doubt that he, you know, made some mistakes and now he's trying to change his life. But once this starts coming out, you're going, well, he didn't change his life. And now you'd be scared.
You know what? And this is a little off the subject here, Captain, but one thing that I cannot stand, and I know he's a bad dude, so it's easy not to like him, Jimmy Rogers.
Dick knows.
But I cannot stand people that give themselves their own nickname. Look, what?
Thanks a lot. I did it to protect my reputation.
I forgot I was speaking with a person like that.
I was trying to teach kids.
You gave yourself an alias. That's right. Different. You gave yourself an alias. Let me tell you about this. There's one guy I used to work with. The first time I worked with him, the first day, he goes, "You can call me Cricket." And I said, "Okay." He informs me everybody calls him Cricket. And I said, "Okay, well, what's the significance? How did you get that nickname?" He says, back when I was in high school, there was a kid that used to sit next to me in class, and all the kids called him Cricket, and I really liked that, so I gave myself that nickname right after I graduated high school.
Very awesome. So, very creative.
Let me tell you, here's one thing I think we should do, Captain, because we're able to piece together a very good timeline regarding what we know happened, because this is what the police can later prove happened during this whole circumstances. And I think the waters might be a little murky at this point. So I think we should go through this clear cut timeline to lay out what happened, because there's other suspicions involved here. We have this Taylor Shoemaker stating that Jimmy was hired by Wayne, who was hired by Mark Sievers.
Right.
Well, Wayne and Jimmy are arrested. Mark Sievers is not arrested. He's still living at his home with his daughters and in some fashion still running the doctor's office.
Right, but mind you, this is pure speculation because this is just what Jimmy told her, and we don't know. But what we do have is we have Jimmy and Wayne now in the custody of law enforcement.
So it took a lot to get here, but what really happened? What can the police tell us that happened, and what are they going to try to prove? So this is a pretty comprehensive timeline. So if you're lost, this will fill you in. So if you don't pay any attention to anything else we say, pay attention here, right? So in December of 2010, Curtis Wainwright was arrested from the discovery of methamphetamine lab. He serves time and is later released. While serving time, he meets this guy named Jimmy Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Rogers was a petty criminal for most of his life, but before being arrested for a weapons charge, which was a much more serious charge. In September of 2014, Jimmy Rogers is released from federal prison. In May of 2015, Curtis Wainwright gets married. And the wedding takes place in Missouri. Now, this is important not only because it's shocking that anyone would marry Wainwright, but some have speculated that this is where some of the planning for the eventual murder might have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because at Wainwright's wedding, Mark Sievers, was he the best man at this wedding, Captain?
I believe so.
He was in the grooms, you know, at least a groomsman.
So Mark's there. He's at Wayne's wedding, but so is Jimmy.
Jimmy Rogers is a guest at this wedding.
The Hammer.
Now, it's uncertain. It's not clear if the two actually met or interacted during this time, but it puts all three of these guys in the same place at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that Teresa Sievers, Mark's wife, was not present at this wedding.
Right.
Then that takes us to June 26th. This is just 2 days before the attack. June 26, 2015, Jimmy Rogers worked from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. that day. And then he was scheduled to be off until June 30th. So a short time after leaving work,
which he was telling everybody at work, he was going down to help his cousin with something in Florida.
It's weird because he had told multiple different stories about why he was going to Florida. And mm-hmm. It's almost like he's bragging about this trip. You'd mentioned the thing about the cousin. He also said something about he was going down there to work a job that was going to pay him quite a bit of money.
Right.
Then there's this thing about visiting somebody, and it was an all-expenses-paid trip. So, yeah, he had a few things that he threw out there to people.
Yeah, Captain Dick knows, yeah.
So sometime after leaving work on that day, on the 26th, he meets up with Wainwright, and the two of them depart here's another story.
They rent a car.
Right. But they depart for what he told, Jimmy Rogers told his girlfriend, would be a $10,000 weekend job.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't tell her what the job is. So, as you stated, Wainwright rented a vehicle in his hometown. The vehicle was complete with a GPS system. Now, police were later able to determine that the vehicle rented by Wainwright on the weekend Teresa Sievers was killed, that somebody had typed Teresa Sievers' address into that GPS system, routing out a map to her murder.
Ha! Got him!
Yeah, so if that's not enough evidence. So then they get down to Florida,
mm-hmm.
and they get down there on a Sunday. And I believe they arrive at their destination, the Sievers' house.
Mm-hmm.
And then guess what they type into their GPS? Some coordinates to the local Walmart.
Well, I there's some stuff I want to get into before we go to that.
All right, let's get into that right after this quick beer break. bastards.
And we were just talking about Wainwright and Jimmy Rogers renting a vehicle and then, according to the GPS, making their way to Florida just 2 days before Teresa Seavers was killed. Now, this is the thing I wanted to bring up, Captain, was this. And this is where I think things can get a little scary or at least weird for reasons that we will explain later. But on the morning of Sunday, June 28th, mm-hmm. the Seavers home security system, their home alarm system, is deactivated at 6:09 a.m. Okay, now the reason why this is strange is because Bonnie Seavers, Mark Seavers' mother, she's not coming over to the house until after 8 o'clock to take care of the dogs.
Right, so we could assume this is Wayne and Jimmy deactivating the alarm.
Yeah, they go to the Seavers' home. They have no trouble getting into the home, and then they deactivate the alarm.
Right, but now if Wayne is their IT guy for computers and phones and stuff like that, he might be their IT guy for their alarm system as well. He might know the code.
He could have set up the alarm system. He could have mm-hmm. even installed the garage door opener that you punch the code into to open up the garage.
Possible.
This would put him in, give him access to the home without even having a key to the front door. So after the Seavers home alarm system is deactivated at 6:09 a.m. on June 28th, then later we have Wainwright and Jimmy Rogers. They're spotted at a Walmart on 6 Mile Cypress Parkway in Fort Myers, Florida. Mm-hmm. This is roughly about 20 miles from Teresa Seavers' home.
Yeah, they're actually on video footage.
Yeah, you see them standing together. Mm-hmm. And while they're there, they're going to pick up some items. And one of those items is going to be a hammer.
Rubber boots.
They also purchased some trash bags and a lock pick set.
Mm-hmm. Basically a murder kit.
Yeah, they did purchase some other items while they were there, but those are the ones that stand out. Mm-hmm. Well, at approximately 8:10 a.m. that morning, the Seavers home security alarm system is now reactivated. Now, during the day, Mark Seavers speaks to his mother, telling her to leave the home alarm system off. Mm-hmm. Because remember, she tells Mark when they have their conversation, look, I'm having some trouble with the alarm system.
Right, and that's because it was already shut off by Wayne and Jimmy.
Yeah, so, you know, most of these alarm systems, you type in the code and you hit press 1 to turn it on or 2 to turn it off.
Well, and let's just assume that Mark's mother didn't go to school for computer. And so she's going up to an alarm system, right? Mm-hmm. If alarm system is on, I put in my code, boop, beep, 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 right? And then it goes, alarm off. But if the alarm is off and I go up to it and go, let me put in my code, beep, 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 doesn't do anything. So when it didn't do anything, she probably thought, what the hell am I doing wrong?
Or there's a chance that she turned it on. Here's what I think happened, because the words that the police use are deactivated and reactivated.
Okay, so she turned it back on by putting in the code.
Yeah, so what would have happened in that circumstance, Captain, is that when she left the day before, mm-hmm. after leaving the house, she turned on the alarm. Then somebody showed up unbeknownst to her at the home and deactivated the alarm before she returned.
Jimmy and Wayne.
Yep. So when she returns to the house, she thinks she's turning off the alarm when in fact she's turning it back on.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore probably when she would go to leave, you know, they've hijacked the system that's supposed to be running. It's supposed to be on when she returns. However, it's not. So I didn't do a great job of explaining that, but I think you get what we're going with that.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells his mom, look, if you're having trouble with the alarm, don't bother with it, because after you let the dogs out later today, my wife, Teresa, she's coming home that night. So it's not like the house is not going to be monitored for very long before she returns.
Right. Plus there's two people sent to murder her.
Well, and this at 4:13 p.m. on that Sunday, Bonnie Seavers leaves the Seavers home for the final time. And as instructed, she does not turn on the alarm. Sometime after Bonnie leaves, Wainwright and Jimmy Rogers return to the Seavers residence. They lay in wait there for Teresa to return. At 10 p.m., Dr. Teresa Sievers, her plane touches down in Southwest Florida International. Mm-hmm. She then calls Mark, her husband, to tell her, him that she arrived safely. At 10:55 p.m., Dr. Sievers leaves the airport driving the family's blue van and goes directly to her house. Then she arrives at home alone. It was at 9 a.m. the following day that her office opens. She's late. They call Mark Sievers, who then calls the neighbor to go check on the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what happens from there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, later that same day, Dr. Sievers' family, Mark and the two girls, they arrive back to Florida from Connecticut. It's the following day, on June 30th, that Jimmy Rogers is back in Missouri, and he shares with his employer that he just made a 16-hour trip by highway to visit his recent law school graduate brother in Florida,
mm-hmm,
for an all-expenses trip paid by his brother to visit him. On that same day, on the 30th, is when that sign goes up on the doctor's office informing all the patients that Dr. Sievers has passed away. Her funeral was held on July 6th, and it was on the 12th of July that a SWAT team raids Wainwright's trailer in Missouri. On August 24th, the Lee County Sheriff's Office, they contacted Jimmy Rogers' probation officer. This is when they reported that they knew that Rogers had been in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
A neighbor, well, actually several neighbors, told newspapers that they had seen Jimmy Rogers' trailer being raided by police. He's later arrested for violation of the probation itself, but it wasn't until the following day on the 27th when Jimmy Ray Rogers and Curtis Wainwright are charged with murder, with the murder of Dr. Teresa Sievers. Now, the strange thing here, Captain, is it wasn't until 6 months later, when in late February of 2016, that Mark Sievers is finally arrested at his home in Bonita Springs, Florida.
Right. And I think the thing is, you have to have some kind of connection. And when you have Mark Sievers, like we said earlier in part one, that, you know, he turned over his phone.
Mm-hmm.
He turned over his computer.
Mm-hmm.
He also has this airtight alibi. Multiple people. He's 1,300 miles away. You know, so the only thing here is that he didn't murder his wife.
Right.
But did he, based off of what Jimmy Rogers is saying, did he set it up where he was going to pay Wayne? And then the other question here is, one of the things that is said about Wayne and Mark's relationship was that Wayne really looked up to Mark and that almost mimicked him. When Mark shaved his head because he was going bald, Wayne did the same thing.
Right.
And a lot of their friends in high school said these guys were super close, but back in the day, they didn't look like twins. Almost like one person is mimicking the other. And you got one guy living in this trailer and another guy married to a successful woman running a successful practice where they're paying you to do IT work and phone work. You know, so your friend is married, to has a lot of money, lives in a big, nice house. You start wondering, is Mark involved in some way? Or is this some plan that Wayne came up with all on his own?
Well, we should also throw out there, too, that they have the appearance that they have a lot of money. It actually right. looks like once you get beneath the surface that they probably didn't have a lot of money, that the finances were being mishandled somehow.
Well, yeah, they were making a lot of money.
They were spending a lot of money.
I mean, I tell this story all the time. I used to have this stupid-ass dick face. I mean, he was just the worst human in the world. I think he drove like a Porsche or something. The guy would come in all smug, and he like, it's like he sprayed his cologne 10 times too many.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I remember one time he puts $8,000 into the bank. So he put the $8,000 into the bank, but he was like negative $7,000, right?
Right.
So he comes in the next day, and then there's more fees. So he puts in $8,000 or whatever. He's now down to like $200. Mm-hmm. He's like, give me $1,100. So I go, well, you only got $100 some left. You know, so my point is, you know, and then of course he was pissed. He's like, dude, I gave you $8,000 yesterday. I was like, yeah, but you're in the negative.
You owed us that money.
Right. So, but my point is they were making a lot of money.
Yeah. She was a very successful doctor.
The problem there was they were spending more money than they made. And so, but still, it's that lifestyle. You still have nice cars. You still have a nice house. This is something. And also, we have an open relationship and possible swinging happening. Is it possible that, you know, he comes there, he drives 1,300 miles, he's hanging out with them one night, he's drinking with them, that he ends up having sex with her at some point? Is that possible?
Possibly, yeah.
And so if that happens, is there some kind of jealousy thing?
We should be clear about what you're kind of doing a balancing act on offense here. And I think we should be clear about what you're getting to, because the reason why Mark Sievers is arrested is because Wainwright, his best friend that happens to look exactly like him, he tells the police, look, Mark Sievers paid me to kill his wife. Mark Sievers orchestrated this whole thing.
Or was going to pay me, right?
Right. And so they didn't arrest Mark Sievers until 6 months later because they really had nothing on him until one of these guys flipped on him. Now they...
Right, but we need to be clear. It took Wayne 6 months to flip on him.
Yeah, because he was going to face the death penalty.
Right.
And Florida is pretty good at killing people. So he probably got scared. Now, so up until this point, we have Taylor Shoemaker, Jimmy Rogers' girlfriend, that she can tell police all day and all night that, you know what, Mark Sievers hired Wayne, and then Wayne hired Jimmy, and this is how this whole thing went down. The problem is they don't have any evidence to that. Now, when you have a guy that's facing murder charges, and the guy comes forward and he says, you know what, instead of putting me on the death, giving me the death penalty, let's reduce this thing down to second degree murder.
I'll plead guilty. Mm-hmm.
You give me 25 years and I'm going to testify for you against Mark Sievers. Then boom, you go arrest Mark Sievers. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the big debate, though. The balancing act that the captain was doing here is this doesn't necessarily mean that Mark Sievers is absolutely 100% guilty. Right. There's still some things that you have to analyze in this because you have in it. And here's the thing. When I went into this, Captain, I went into this looking at it like this Mark Sievers guy, he's guilty as can be. There's no changing my opinion. Now, where my opinion did change was, and yes, you could say that the people that I listened to were biased. However, the people that changed my opinion were listening to his family, this Mark Sievers family, his mother, his sister, and then listening to some of his friends that were not associated with Wainwright. These people paint a much brighter, better picture of Mark Sievers. And these people, this is what they're wondering. They're not saying 100% are Mark Sievers that we know and love is innocent. What they're saying is this. Think about this idea that possibly Wainwright did this without Mark Sievers' knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then once he's caught, once he's busted, the only lifeline he has left to throw out to save his own ass is to throw Mark Sievers under the bus and be willing to testify against him in court.
Right. But okay, so what's the evidence against Mark? Let's get into that.
Yes. So the evidence against Mark, well, this, you can take this or leave this as far as you want to go for evidence, but there was over $4 million worth of life insurance planned to pay out upon Teresa Sievers' death.
Yeah, well, this is where it's interesting, though. It's $4.4 million. But there was like five policies.
There's a lot of policies, yes.
Which is odd. So
yeah, I would think so.
And also when you're behind on bills and you're constantly living paycheck to paycheck, kind of a weird thing to pay out to have those five. And we know that Mark is kind of running that area. You know, she is running the practice, but he's running probably payroll. He's probably running their finances. He's kind of taking care of the kids while she's at work.
And there's been speculation, Captain, and I don't know if this is coming from the media or from the law enforcement, mm-hmm. but there's been speculation that Teresa Seavers may not have been aware of some of these policies.
Right.
That maybe he took them out without her knowledge or forged documents. Here's the thing. I don't typically think life insurance is a red flag. That's usually not a red flag to me. I understand that it is motive at times. But, yeah, but what I mean by that is if somebody has a policy for $80,000 or $100,000, I kind of look past that as a red flag. When I see policies that are for these large sums of money,
mm-hmm.
$4 million, $4.5 million, and I understand when you have a nice home and when you have children together that you should increase.
She's running a practice.
You should increase and carry larger amounts of insurance, but this seems like an extreme amount of insurance. This seems like a warranted red flag to me.
Yeah. And what else do we have against Mark?
Well, really, we only have the words of these other people that we know to be involved by their own admission into the murder of his wife. Now, Jimmy Rogers, to be clear, has not told the police. He's not said, hey, I'm guilty and I'm willing to cooperate.
Right.
But we have his girlfriend that's fed them plenty of information that makes him look very guilty. The other thing, though, is there are some... Here's what I wonder that's going to come out in trial. There's been a lot of communication between Wainwright and Mark Seavers. And what I mean by that, there's been more texting and communication between the two of them than even Mark and his own wife, Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just having a long distance friendship could explain that away.
Yeah, but there's some weird stuff going on.
And there. Him being involved in the business could explain this away, but there is some weird interactions. Mm-hmm. You came across some things where Mark is referring to him as honey or baby when talking to Wayne.
Yeah. That's weird.
Which we don't know. They could be joking around. I don't know. Those were found from text messages that were released to the public. However, they redacted a lot of the information within those text messages. So there's a lot of missing portions of those conversations. There's one thing that's incredibly interesting, though, and that's that Wainwright would say that a lot of the communication they did, a lot of the organizing and planning of this murder was done over a burner phone.
Mm-hmm.
That they both had phones, untraceable phones.
Right, so this would be like a prepaid phone that you'd buy somewhere. Right?
Yep. And what is stated during some of those text messages on their regular phones, on their day-to-day phones,
right,
is you have situations where Mark Seavers is talking to Wainwright and he's saying, hey, can you talk in 10 minutes? Or, hey, do you got 15 minutes to talk? And then he would use the word other in parentheses. Now, police using information given to them by Wainwright states that when they say other, Mark is saying, let's talk on these other phones, not have this conversation on our day-to-day, our everyday phones.
And that's probably not even a text message. That's probably like an actual just pick up and call. So that is interesting. So we have those two pieces.
Here's some strange things that I think about, though, Captain. Okay, so...
I don't want to hear about the strange things you think about.
Well, in relation to this case.
Okay.
Let's narrow it down a little bit.
Let's focus on this case.
So, all right. There's a couple issues here. One, we know Mark would have had information that his wife would be returning from the vacation before and without the rest of the family. He could have passed that information along to Wayne. That's an easy scenario we can all wrap our heads around.
Mm-hmm.
The other scenario is this. If Wayne oversees their computers, even just at their office, even if it's not at their home, just their office, let's say, if office computers were used to purchase those plane tickets,
mm-hmm.
then Wayne would also know that information without Mark having told him that information.
Yeah, or if it's done through an email or like you get confirmations. You know, if you bought plane tickets, you get the confirmation through your email.
So
that's possible. But here's the other thing, though, too, is, and it's not saying that Wayne wouldn't know this information, but obviously it was the family is planning a trip and that she's going to come back early.
Mm-hmm.
And so what a perfect time to do this.
Right.
Now, what's weird is it's a perfect time for Wayne to do it. It's a perfect time for Mark to tell Wayne to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy and Wayne both were talking about this trip months in advance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's a little more evidence leaning to the fact that Mark is paying them, because he would have known about the trip way right. more in advance. You see what I'm saying?
Unless the tickets were purchased way in advance.
Right, but then that would be Wayne, for whatever reason, wants to kill her, which we don't know what the motive would be.
Mm-hmm.
And he is planning this months and months in advance because he hears about a trip.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Like, if he wanted her dead that bad for whatever reason, like, I don't know. I just think it's kind of weird.
Okay, let me throw this at you, because I've been going back and forth on this quite a bit. Because my thought is, I want to try to hear out Mark Seaver's family, and I want to try to understand what they're saying. Now, they've not presented these ideas to anybody, as far as I'm aware, but what I could come up with was this. The only problem I have with Mark Seaver's being involved in this
mm-hmm.
is his mother, Bonnie Seaver's. That throws a wrench into the plan a little bit. You have Bonnie Seaver's coming and going at times that she determines to let these dogs out and to check on the house. Mm-hmm. Now, Wainwright and Jimmy Rogers, we know this because the alarm system was deactivated at 6 a.m. Teresa Seaver's didn't arrive at home until 11 p.m. or 11:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there for like, what, 16, 18 hours before Teresa returns to the home. And I know they spent a lot of that time outside of the home. They went to Walmart and they went to the beach and they killed time waiting for Teresa to return at 11:30 at night. The wrench in the problem is there's a chance that they were within a 60-minute window of bumping into Bonnie Seaver's.
Yeah, but they would have known. They would have known this stuff. Again, this points towards Mark, too. They would have known her actions and whereabouts based off of Mark. They wouldn't know that if Mark's not involved. So they wouldn't have known when they could have gotten to the house and when they couldn't have gotten to the house, that she came once in the morning and once at night. And isn't it just so weirdly that they're there the whole time, that she's there twice, right?
Right.
Or maybe she's only there once on that Sunday, but she never runs into him. And then the murder doesn't take place until probably after midnight.
Right. So, no, but what I'm saying, though, is that that's a loose end for Mark Seaver's. Mm-hmm. If Mark knows everything, let's assume he knows everything that's going on, that he orchestrated this whole thing. The loose end is his mother checking on the dogs. You can tell your mother, show up at 8 a.m. and let them out, and then come back at 4 p.m. and let them out. Once you leave for Connecticut, you have no control over what time that woman decides to show up to let the dogs in and out of the house.
Right. Well, all I'm saying is it's pretty easy. If she was only supposed to go there once on Sunday, it's this simple. You text her in the morning, hey, what time do you think you're going to go over there? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, we know, or you're talking to her while you're on vacation, and she's like, you know, maybe you know your mom's a creature of habit. If she says she's going over there at 8 o'clock, it's going to be between 8 and 9, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is it's a very small wrinkle to deal with. And
well, it may not even be a wrinkle to deal with. And here's what I mean by this. I think it's a big loose end. I think it's a big problem, because if for some reason you're sending people that you have paid to kill a woman. So by them signing up for the job, they're stating they're very capable of killing somebody in cold blood.
Right.
How do you know they're not going to freak out if they bump into your mother at the house and kill her? Okay, so that is listen.
It's not that big of a deal, because they're best friends. Guess who would know who his mom is? Wayne would know who Mark's mom is. She comes into the house. He wouldn't go, oh my God, I thought it was Teresa, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. He would know. And then if Wayne was in the house and he bumped into Mark's mom, hey, what are you doing here? You don't have to kill her. You just have to say, I'm working on the security system.
No, I get that. But that's out of Mark's hands. Once he leaves for Connecticut, all that stuff's out of his hands. He can't control his mother's movements coming and going from the home. He can't control Wayne and Jimmy's movements coming and going from the home. Yeah, now,
it's also reported, though, that Wayne is a very intelligent man. And so maybe Mark had a little more faith in him that, hey, if I'm paying him to kill the wife, he's going to kill the wife, and that's it. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I disagree.
All right. So whether or not that is the actual deal or not, the thing that you can't, I'm having a hard time explaining, is the text messages where it says other. Talk on other.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is fishy. And if Mark can't explain that away.
The thing here is you either have two very dumb guys committing this murder, or you have three dumb guys, one who hired two dumb guys to carry out the murder. Because they made, as far away as they came from, Wainwright and Jimmy Rogers made it very easy for the police to catch them. There should have been very little to connect these two to Bonita Springs, Florida.
Right. I mean, you don't put it into GPS.
You don't put it in a GPS. You don't rent a vehicle in your name. You figure out how to get there without doing things like that.
Mm-hmm. You don't go to a Walmart so you can be seen on video footage.
Yeah, but here's the biggest thing. That even a disorganized, mentally ill killer has avoided in the past.
Mm-hmm.
When you beat somebody to death with a hammer, don't leave that hammer at the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
That presents a very big, because remember earlier,
you know, there's some psychopath right now in their basement listening to us writing down, don't leave hammer.
Well, okay. So earlier when we talked about how did the police track these guys down, we know, look, they didn't arrest them until late August. They were already on these dudes. You can tell by Sheriff Scott's words when he's talking to the reporter, they were already into this story somehow back 10 days after the murder, when he says, you know what, this was not a random thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very confident when I say that there are connections to the victim from the murderer in this case. I'm very confident when I state that. And I wonder if it was something as simple as this. Did they trace that hammer? We know they found the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is it to go, you know what, who distributes this hammer? Who do they distribute it to? Okay, I understand that there's like 1,000,000 Walmart stores, and maybe every single one of them carries this particular make and model of hammer. I get that there's a lot of them out there, that it could be a very common hammer. However, there's a chance that when they go, how hard is it to go, look, this hammer is distributed to Walmarts.
Mm-hmm.
We got 5 or 6 of them that are within a 30-mile radius of the crime scene. Oh, there was one purchased at this Walmart on this day at this particular time. It was a cash purchase. They bought everything that they bought that day with a $100 bill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there would still be record of that sale. They could go. You go to all those Walmarts and you say, okay, I need to see surveillance of who bought this. There's a chance you even pick up the person's license plate in one of the surveillance cameras in the parking lot.
Well, and they probably wouldn't know who they're looking for.
No, they wouldn't. But if you can get a picture of the guy or persons standing at the register at the time that the hammer was paid for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what probably tipped him off is, you know, like we said, Wayne looks just like Mark. So you know what Mark looks like. So all of a sudden, if let's say you go to that Walmart and you're looking through video footage, and all of a sudden you see a guy the day before the murder takes, or before they found the body, you see a guy buying a hammer that looks just like the lady's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go, oh, shit, but that's not the lady's husband? Well, who's this guy? So, I don't know. Where do you lean? What's your gut feeling telling you about this case?
Well, I want to point out here, Captain, that earlier I was not trying to make a strong argument for why Mark Seavers might be innocent by bringing up his mother. But I wanted to kind of put you in my shoes where I was trying to figure out where this thing would go. Because what we're going to have here, and what we're going to see once it finally gets to trial, is you're going to have Wainwright saying, I was hired by Mark Seavers to kill his wife. You're going to have Mark Seavers coming forward with the defense saying, I had nothing to do with this. Wainwright is a crazy bastard, and he killed my wife and then later tried to blame it on me.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have two very conflicting stories. And I was wondering where I could find things that would make me question who was involved and who was not involved. And I will state again, I do believe that Bonnie Seavers is a bit of a loose end for Mark being involved in this. Now, here's the thing. What I mean by that is, what if these killers decide to kill your mother? That's not who you hired them to kill. However, if Mark Seavers is just a complete horrible dude, psychopath guy, maybe he doesn't care if his mom happens to get attacked or something happens during the course of them carrying out this quote unquote mission.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, and you're right, they wouldn't have to necessarily kill Bonnie Seavers, but that's out of your hands once you put them, those men inside your home and your potential mom inside the home at the same time.
Well, obviously you're a piece of shit if you're hiring some guy to come in, kill your wife, and she, and it's not just your wife, it's the mother of your two children.
Well, yes, obviously, but I still think that the mother is a bit of a loose end. Yeah, they don't have to kill her, but guess what? The plan, what they were hired to do, that's off now. You can't bump into Bonnie Seavers, and then later that night, Teresa Seavers is murdered in her home, and that's not easy to put piece together, right?
Right, but I think they have more here. I mean, they were able to take death penalty off the table, and I don't think law enforcement or the prosecutors would have done that if Wayne wasn't able to give them Mark on a silver platter. And with this loose evidence that we have, that's not enough to arrest Mark. So there had to be something else to even just get that arrest.
Well, and then I have to question Wainwright's story, right? Okay, so why would his story be right when I'm saying that there's this loose end for Mark's story? So the loose end for Wainwright's story is Jimmy Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
You have this violent guy that you're bringing down there with you. And if the story goes as it goes, that you're hired to commit murder, he's there for the sole purpose to make sure that this murder happened. Because it appears that if they were hired for murder, that Wainwright was not comfortable doing it by himself.
Yeah, he might not have thought he could.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, he's friends with Mark, so he could have been friends with Teresa.
But why would Jimmy Rogers be a loose end for Wainwright? Well, the problem here is, if you don't get paid to carry out your task, remember, they're supposed to get paid from insurance money. Mm-hmm. Insurance money only gets paid upon someone's death. So that means that you bring this guy down there with you, you kill somebody, and if you're not getting that money from Mark, you have no way to pay Jimmy the Hammer Rogers, who could in turn later kill you for being upset that he didn't get paid $10,000 for going down there and helping you. So that's the loose end for Wainwright. That's the part he's not going to be able to explain away. Until you get to this, there was $40,000 in a safe in that household. The money was not taken from the home. The strange thing I find about their actions that day was they showed up at the home at 6 a.m. They left the home and went to Walmart to purchase what we believe items to kill Teresa Seavers with and to clean up with afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
One of the items that they purchased during that visit was a lockpick set. Why would they show up? Why would they need a lockpick set when we know that they probably entered through using the code through the garage door and then entered the home and typed in the security code? They don't even need a key to the house, let alone a lockpick set to break into the home.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got to wondering, is there a chance that Wainwright knew that they had a safe in the home with $40,000 in it? And if he did, does he hire this punk Jimmy Rogers to ride shotgun with him, go down? He knows, maybe he assumes all four family members are going to be gone until the following day, that he wouldn't encounter anybody, would not have to kill anybody, that he went down there behind his friend's back just to steal $40,000 from this house. He gets to the house. Why would they show up to the house first and then leave and then come back? That's strange, too. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, okay, you know, a lot of us know our friends pretty well. There's some people that I'm sure go, you know what? He's told me time and time again, there's $40,000 in the safe, and I know he keeps the keys on his desk. You show up at 6 a.m., you get to the desk, there's no keys there. Now you need a lockpick set. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if he went back in one of the purchases being the lockpick set to pick the lock to the safe, to rob the safe, and leave there, not intending to kill anybody.
No, they intended to kill people. They bought a hammer. They bought rubber boots. They bought trash bags.
I understand. I understand. I'm just kind of walking through this thing. You're setting landmines along my road here.
Yeah.
But they show back up to the house. Teresa stumbles upon their little breaking and entering situation.
Mm-hmm.
They freak out and kill her. That could be an argument for Wainwright. There's another issue here, though. When you start pulling through all these things of why and who could be involved and who could be innocent, the other problem is, though, why did they have $40,000 in the house to begin with? We've heard time and time again, they were living paycheck to paycheck. Mark was in charge of the finances. It doesn't seem likely to me that a family living paycheck to paycheck would choose to have $40,000 sitting inside their home.
Maybe she didn't know about the money, though.
That's what I'm getting at. And that's what I think Mark's going to have a big problem explaining when he gets to trial, is that why was that $40,000 in the house? Was that $40,000, A, down payment to these guys that are going to show up and kill your wife? And B, were they supposed to break into that safe or pick the lock to make it look like it was a burglary?
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't be traced back to Mark or any of his friends.
Exactly.
And I think you're right on something. One thing you're incredibly right about here, Captain, and I hope you're right, because I share the same suspicion. I think we are not hearing about potentially a mountain of evidence against Mark Sievers. It's going to be so interesting when this thing finally gets to court, what evidence ends up coming out and how much of it is not produced just based off of what Wainwright says.
Right. And so somebody is a horrible piece of shit. It's either a group of two or a group of three. And hopefully law enforcement gets to the bottom of this. And the real victims other than Teresa are the children, because they lost not only their mother, but now they lost their father. All right, I still cannot tell you beautiful people about our announcement, but we're getting closer.
Yes, we are.
So, and we're not doing this just to tease people.
Captain likes to tease.
I do like to tease. I think so. Poke people's stomachs, pull their ears, wet willies.
Should we remind them one more time about the Crime Con?
Yeah,
because it's coming up. It's going to be in May, the first weekend of May. And if you want tickets to CrimeCon, we were there last year. We had a great time meeting everybody.
Nick was there for one event.
I was there for half a day, but I'm going to be there for the entirety of the event this year.
Yeah, we signed a contract that will be there for the whole time. Now, what it is a bunch of people hanging out. There's a bunch of activities. There's a bunch of events. Go to CrimeCon.com and look at those events. And then also, we'll be there. There's going to be a bunch of podcasts. We hung out with Generation Y last year. We hung out with, and I think this year we're going to have Mike from Sword and Scale will be there.
Mm-hmm. It's loaded.
A bunch of other people. Up and Vanished. We got to hang out with Payne Lindsay last year. Had some drinks with him. We had drinks with Bob Ruff with Truth and Justice.
Mm-hmm.
So basically we're going to be drinking the whole time. And then what we did last year, or what I did last year, was we would just hang out at the hotel bar and drink Hotel, Motel, Holiday Inn, and we just get hammered at night. So it's a great time. I think you can buy weekend packages now, but when you do so, use our promo code TC Garage. That's TC Garage and that will be at crimecon.com.
Thank you, Captain. And once again, I got so angry I damn near lost my voice. So I have a whole week to recuperate.
It's hard being wrong.
Until next time, everybody, be good, be kind, and don't litter.